Welcome to the All-in-One podcast for middle school language arts teachers. I'm Linda, and I've been a teacher for over 30 years. I can help you with tips, tricks, and motivation that will simplify your planning, streamline your teaching, and enjoy more free time. Well, hey there. It's Linda. I hope that all is going well in your world. If you're listening in real time, it's March, and that means that it's been a while since I've spoken with you. I had to take a couple of weeks off because my social media accounts were all hacked and disabled, and it created this whole slew of headaches within my business as far as I couldn't get them back. There's nobody in Facebook to contact, blah, blah, blah. I had to change everything everywhere. It's a really long and boring story, but in any event, I am back and I'm happy to be here. And like I said, if you're listening in real time, it's March. And that means that teachers everywhere are working hard to get to that coveted spring break. I know how stressful these weeks can be, and in the weeks leading up to some much-needed time off, there's so much to do. State testing is looming, the kids are getting antsy, and you are most likely on deck for a teacher observation. I understand a lot of people call this a teacher performance assessment. I refer to it as a teacher observation, so I'll use the terms interchangeably. So today's topic is going to be about that teacher performance assessment and what you can do to be prepared, whether it's announced or unannounced. Before we get into today's topic, I want to make sure that you know that I usually mention at least one freebie, and I have two today that are designed to help you ace your observation. Be sure to head to the show notes to grab them. When you sign up, you'll be signing up to become a member of my email list. And once you're on my email list, I will email you any future freebies that I create. So it's a good place to be and to stay. I also want to mention here that I am now offering one-on-one coaching to help you with your important lessons and ideas for any special units that you are doing, such as doing your observation lesson. I'll leave that link in the show notes as well so that you can check out what I offer. All right, so we know that your teacher observation can feel dreadful, especially, I believe, for newer teachers who don't really know what to expect, and you get yourself really worked up about it. And I get it. I really do. Maybe your observation is planned, and maybe you know there is just one more left and somebody's going to be dropping in any now between now and the end of the year. But either way, you're going to need a shift in your mindset to get you to understand that you really want to try to showcase your strengths to your administrator. And although, yes, it can be a very stressful thing to do, I have some no-fail tips that will help you to impress your administrators and help you score high. And by the way, all of these are tips for teaching well in any realm. It doesn't just have to be when you're observed. So today we're going to discuss anticipatory sets, why less teaching is better, why centers work incredibly well for observations, clipboards. I know that sounds crazy, but just hang in there with me. Higher level questioning and closure. Okay, so we're going to start by talking about anticipatory sets. So one of the most basic and some might say crucial parts of a lesson is the opening. Think about it. You've been to many workshops and have taken many, many classes on your own as a teacher. When the instructor can grab you from the beginning, you are usually in. And if they don't, you are out. At least I know I am, and I know every teacher I've ever sat with in a workshop has felt the same way. I once had a principal. I had a really phenomenal principal in my last years of teaching, and he showed a video of a science teacher literally lighting something on fire to capture his students' attention at the beginning of the class. I honestly don't remember what he was setting on fire, but the point was that he got the kids' attention. My principal then went on to ask, how can you figuratively set your class on fire as soon as they walk in your door? It was honestly a great discussion, and some great ideas came from it. And it's something that I always keep in mind in teaching, especially during a teacher observation. And it's important to have this in place for many reasons. First, it's good teaching. However, we all know that there are days when you just need to get right into your lesson, or there are odds and ends that need to be addressed with your kids. And some days just don't lend themselves to the perfect lesson. So, if an observer pops in, you need to have something on hand so that you can score well. So, I do have some help for anticipatory sets. So, be sure your kids are used to handing out a quick response sheet or posting something perhaps on your Google Classroom or digital learning platform. I use Google Classroom and I love the question features. I actually have a whole blog post on questions. I can link that in the show notes as well. Because you can just kind of pop it up there and the kids interact with it. And it's like having a digital form of an index card almost. I have a bunch of generic class openers for language arts, and I have that for free. So this way, if somebody should pop into your class, all you have to do is copy, paste, and pop it up or write it on the board. So I will be sure to link that free language arts anticipatory prompt in my show notes. Okay, second point, less teaching is better. Yeah, you heard me correctly. The biggest mistake I see new teachers making during their teacher observation is teaching too much. Of course, you have to lead the class, get them ready, give them some direct instruction. However, the majority of the time should be spent with students doing the work and activities that you provide and being engaged in their learning. My philosophy in the classroom has always centered around doing mini lessons. Even though that's a term we hear more in reading and writing workshops, it can be applied to any teaching environment. As I also teach social studies, I depend on this concept because kids zone out if your teaching is too long-winded. And again, you've been there. You know, when you're in a class or a workshop and somebody is going on and on and on, they lose you. So you want to keep your lessons quick, snappy, and engaging. Do your thing in about 15 minutes. Then send kids off to work. And by work, I don't mean sitting silently at their desk to complete a worksheet. I mean get them into small groups or working with a partner on higher level activities. Then you rotate around and engage with your groups. This type of engagement will definitely help you to score high. All right, which leads me into my next point. Use centers for your teacher observation lesson. If you want to showcase your lessons in the best possible way, use centers. This has been a staple in my social studies classroom, and I incorporate this into language arts as well. So I wanted to just give you an example. So let's say that you're doing a character, let's say that you're doing a unit on character study or character analysis. Maybe you'll do a mini lesson on character traits. You would do something for about 10 to 15 minutes. You would do your mini lesson. That's your direct instruction. Then have kids work on literacy centers that can include things like finding text evidence, creating a sensory character, creating a bio poem about a character, and doing maybe a side-by-side comparison of a character versus themselves. So the idea is to get them used to this kind of teaching throughout the year so it's not something new. So my kids know on Centers Day that they start at a certain table and they're going to be rotated around. My centers usually last at least 2 days. And then I go around and I'm interacting with those groups and maybe pulling small groups of kids. I have recently developed a whole line of literacy centers in my TPT store. People are really liking them, so I really hope that you will look at them because I really do believe that they will help you with important lessons like this. Okay, my next point is to use your clipboard. So what I do is, like I said, I get kids moving, whether or not you want to do an actual center, however you want to structure your activities, I do get kids moving and interacting with each other. So I create a template that has my students' name in a column and blank rows on top to write in skills. I mean, I keep it very basic and use it often. Again, there are times when we don't always do this, but if you are getting observed and want to score high, it's helpful to have a clipboard that shows you are recording notes on your kids. So make your list of student names, put a skill on top of there, and if you get a surprise pop-in, you will have it all set and ready to go. This actually happened to me one time during a teacher observation. I was finishing up a mini lesson and getting kids ready to go off to write. I had my clipboard, which I use frequently, but admittedly not always, and the skill that day was to use text evidence. I walked around to kids and checked in with them, having a genuine conversation, and then wrote a very, very brief note about the kids with whom I met. My administrator specifically commented on how that was such a great technique and asked what I did with the data. I told him I used it to form small groups if I needed to and to look for trends in specific students' writing, which is all true. Okay, so let's talk about higher level questioning. One aspect of observations that's really important to my administrator, and I'm guessing to yours as well, is using high level questioning. So what I do is I keep a Bloom's taxonomy list on my magnetic board next to my desk to be sure that it's handy. If I'm doing a whole group direct instruction, it's right there for me. If I'm walking around, I put it on my clipboard. This way I have an easy reference to be sure I'm not asking all recall questions, that I'm getting to those higher level questionings. And although I have most of this stored in my memory right now, having my list close by is sort of like my safety net. Using high-level questioning is definitely going to help you score high on your next observation. And I do have a freebie that I made, so it's kind of like all nicely formatted onto one sheet. So I hope you'll go over to the show notes to grab that. And lastly, let's talk about closure. You need to wrap up your lesson if you want to score high. If you don't close out your lesson, you are not going to score as high as you should just for doing a very simple closure activity. We all know this is important, and we all know there are days, again, that we don't do this with intention. If you are getting observed, though, you need to do this with intention. So when you're closing out a lesson, be sure to restate your teaching goal, or ask a student to restate it. Let your students know what the next steps are, for example, what you are doing in class tomorrow, what the homework is that they should finish, and things like that. And have, most importantly, have some sort of exit strategy, like an exit ticket or a Google question to answer, or some type of sharing from the day's activity. So just a little note on exit tickets. Your kids should be exposed to these frequently, in fact, on most days, so that it doesn't seem unusual and unnatural. So, you know, if a teacher doesn't usually do a closure and they're kind of done and the kids are packing up and they're like, oh, what are we doing? You don't want them to do that. It should always be part of your routine. So I usually just have index cards on my desk so that I can assign an exit question like on the fly or post something on Google Questions. So I know that's a lot, but it is and it isn't, because it really is just part of good teaching day in and day out. But if you're feeling overwhelmed and you need more help, Again, I want to remind you that I am now offering one-on-one coaching for teacher observations and lessons, so be sure to contact me if you're interested. And be sure to tune in next week because we're getting back on our weekly podcast routine, and I am going to be talking specifically about literacy centers, which is something that I said, you know, is going to be really helpful in a teacher observation. And before I let you go, I do want to formally invite you to join my new Facebook group because my old one was dismantled. And I'm telling you, I'm still, every time I think about it, my blood boils because it was just some weird store that took over my store, that took over my page. I mean, and it listed all of my stuff. It was just so weird. But in any event, I do have a new Facebook group. I don't have many people on it because it is brand new, and I am really anxious to get started again with my Facebook group because I was really got to the point where I developed such a nice little community, and it was a really positive place for ideas. I did a lot of giveaways, and it was just like kind of a feel-good group. So I have every intention of rebuilding it, so I will be sure to leave the link to that as well. I hope this information was helpful. Be sure to check the links that I mentioned in the show notes. My email is available there as well in case you have questions or comments. You can also DM me on Instagram at allinonemiddleschool. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you in the next episode.